From WNYC New York Public Radio, I'm Leonard Lopate. This is just one segment of the Leonard Lopate Show, but every interview is available on demand at WNYC.org. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org.
WNYC On Demand is supported by Open, how American Express serves small business. Open offers a range of products and services designed exclusively for small business. Details at 888-779-OPEN or open.com.
You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
The Voisey Inheritance is a play about financial consultants embezzling money from their clients' accounts. Its plot might have been inspired by recent headlines, and David Mamet would be just the playwright to tackle it. But it was actually written by Harley Granville Barker more than 100 years ago, although Mr. Mamet has chosen to adapt it for a new production that's currently being performed by the Atlantic Theater Company. The reviews have been wonderful, and its run has just been extended for a second time until February 10th. I'm very pleased to welcome its two stars, Fritz Weaver and Michael Stuhlbarg, to my show today. Hello.
Hi.
You play father and son, Mr. Voisey. I don't even know what Mr. Voisey's first name is.
It's Trenchard.
Actually. Trenchard. Oh. His son, Edward, partners in a firm of London solicitors in 1905. Fritz, had you appeared in any Granville Barker plays before?
No. Someone sent me a version of the Barker some years ago. It may well have been the recent version of the Barker.
Because it was a production a few years back.
Yes, and at that time I was very grand about things, and I thought I didn't want to die quite that early in the play.
You die in the first act.
I die in the first act, and that's fine with me at my present age. It's lovely.
On the other hand, if you don't convince us about the complex character of this man, the rest of the play doesn't make any sense. You have a wonderfully meaty part.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes, it's lovely.
Now, you, on the other hand, Michael, are on the stage for every minute of this production.
Yes.
Were you familiar with Granville Barker plays?
I had seen a production off Broadway of his play Waste that was produced by Theater for a New Audience a few years back. It left a very strong impression with me, but that was about as far as I knew of seeing his shows.
There was the Mint Theater production of this play a few years back.
That's right. Also, unfortunately, I missed that. Yeah.
So why do you think this playwright has been so forgotten when he was considered so important about 100 years ago?
Interesting question.
You don't know.
I don't know. He wrote, I think, four plays. Yeah. And this, The Voisey Inheritance, as far as I know, is his most famous of those plays. Mm-hmm. And every now and then it creeps its head back up, and it's always, you know, thought on to be a relevant subject.
And also, he has not weathered as well. He was a great partner of Bernard Shaw, and they ran a company together. Shaw has survived much better. There's something very period about Harley Granville Barker that has not done so well in terms of survival.
Although he talked about topics that we're still discussing. Waste was about abortion. This one about embezzlement, something that we still hear a lot about.
Yes.
And when the play opens, Edward has just discovered that his father has been looting the clients' accounts, and the capital they've entrusted to the firm is largely gone. So, I mean, that sounds very current.
Mm.
Do the audiences need to understand that solicitors were not just personal attorneys, but also managed their clients' finances? But we see that today as well.
Yeah.
Now, Michael, you're probably best known for your role in Martin McDonagh's The Pillow Man a few years back, although there's a TV series now.
Oh, I shot. I was a part of the Studio 60 on the Sunset Strip a while back. I was in the pilot episode of that show. That's right.
Because the reason I asked is because Jack O'Brien told me that he really wanted you for the Coast of Utopia, and you were involved with that. You already committed to that.
That's right. That's right. It's strange how things worked out. I had had my eye on being a part of Coast of Utopia for about 5 years because Jack and I had worked together in The Invention of Love back in 2001. And Tom Stoppard was writing Coast of Utopia, I think, at that time. So I was hoping that I would be involved in it. And then Studio 60 came up, and unfortunately I became unavailable.
But how did you wind up involved in this?
I just auditioned for it. It came along, and this was a wonderful part. So I jumped at the chance.
And the same for you? Do you have to audition these days, Fritz?
I didn't for this one. Just a phone call, and I said, send me the script, and I was taken by it immediately.
Well, it makes sense that David Mamet, who wrote Glengarry Glen Ross, would be drawn to this play. Did you as actors approach the Mamet adaptation differently than you might have the original script? Was he around during the rehearsal period?
No, he was not. He's busy filming, I guess. He's a very busy and very much in demand person. We're hoping he comes soon. We want his notes.
Yes, we do.
We want to know what he thinks.
Well, some people might suspect it's been updated and that it might include what sometimes euphemistically called Mametian language, but
no,
it hasn't happened.
No, not at all. David Mamet is pitch perfect in terms of how people talk, and I think if you dropped him back into any period, he'd know how they talk. But he is perfect on Edwardian speech, and he has delightful little touches throughout the play, which are, even misuses grammar in the way that the upper class British did. And he's wonderful.
Well, what did he really do here? He cut the play down from five acts to two, but even full productions of five-act plays nowadays are produced as two acts.
Yes.
What else did he do?
Well, he in the original version by Granville Barker, there were a lot of the characters that you hear about in our version are not seen, whereas in the Barker version, you had the wives and the children of many of the characters who were spoken of actually make appearances and are in perhaps one scene here, one scene there. The children come running in. But Mr. Mamet wisely, I think, streamlined that and made it much more sort of financially unhelpful.
For a small theater company. Well, yes. He cut out six characters, but he also cut out a set, which makes sense here.
That's right. It doesn't alternate between the dining room and the office. It stays in the library in the Voisey estate.
Now, how does that affect the performance of a part like this? Does it really matter?
Well,
I mean, you're working on the same set the whole time.
Yes, but he manages to get both things in. We have business scenes in the library, as if sometimes they work at home.
Yes.
And you get a full flavor of the old man when his assistant comes in, PC comes in, and they do business. You also get a sense of what the life of the office is. I think this is a wise choice.
The action of the play takes place over a couple of years, and we see Edward, your character Michael, grow as a person. Does that cause trouble, or is it just because you have established a character at the beginning, and
yes,
then you're adjusting him constantly throughout the play.
Oh, I think it's a wonderful challenge as an actor, too, and it gives you a great place to go in creating the arc of a story. You have a young man who is perhaps not so sure about the decisions he's made in his life and then finds out that the situation he's found himself in is quite unfortunate, illegal, volatile, and then you get to see how he transforms himself over the course of a year and a half, 2 years.
Well, he seems to grow every time the situation gets worse.
Yes, indeed. I think he has to. He's made to. And I think as a result of him becoming a stronger person and having to make more difficult decisions, The woman he's engaged to at the beginning of the play, I think, finds him to be a much more attractive fiancé than perhaps he was at the beginning of the play.
Well, she's the only one who supports him through this whole thing.
Yes, and she does.
She's a great character.
Wonderful character.
She's...
And Fritz, your character is kind of an early version of the Teflon Man before there was Teflon. Nobody wants to believe that this wonderful, lovable man could have done what your character does. And we watch him lie through his teeth as he explains himself to his son and are charmed by him all at the same time.
At some point in the play, another of the old man's sons, Hugh, says, "I thought I was the artist, but he is the artist." That's one of the reasons why I stayed away from Harley Granville Barker this time, because it's hard to realize the intentions of one playwright, but to try to get both both points of view, Barker and Mamet. And Mamet puts his own signature on this play very strongly.
So in the past you might have read the original play as kind of research.
I but you can't serve two masters, you see, and I think Mamet is a master and you have to go with him.
But there are also those actors who will tell you, I've heard both sides, actors who say, well, I research everything, I know exactly what was going on in Britain in 1905. And then there are other people who say, I read the play, I trust the script, and I find my character within that.
I think that's correct.
That's what you would do.
I think that is correct. First of all, the audience wasn't around in 1905, so they won't be able to say this is inaccurate. So we do our own version.
Now, one of the things here is that, as I understand it, the ending has changed. I'm not going to reveal it, but didn't he change the ending?
My goodness. I think he did change the ending. He leaves it kind of still in the audience's imagination exactly as to what may happen, but he gives them an impression, and I think it's the way we play it that hopefully will guide them towards the direction in which they think we will probably, how things will be resolved.
In a New York Times online slideshow, Michael, you say that there's no wall behind the paintings that make up pretty much the set.
Yes.
Now, I didn't realize that. But do you see that as a metaphor for the family firm, which has no capital holding it up?
I think that's how they intended it, actually. The set, beautifully designed by Derek McLean, and apparently he and David Warren, our director, had been wanting to use the idea of this set for something. And then when this play came around, it seemed to be a perfect metaphor for, you know, here's this exorbitantly beautiful home. And then you realize that the paintings that cover the wall disguise the fact that there's no wall there.
Just there are the paintings, and then there are these two grand doors that everybody makes entrances and exits through.
But you hadn't realized that.
I hadn't. You know, I saw it very much as a play of its time, and I just bought everything.
Yes, and
since the performances were so much were so on target. Mm. I guess I never even thought about it.
It's a beautiful set. I mean, it's one of the stars of the show,
yes.
I think, that set.
Yeah.
Go out there before the show and sit in the audience just marveling at it.
Well, what about the fact that this play has been extended a second time? I think we're the first to announce that it's now going to go to February 10th. When you signed on, I assume you signed on for a brief run because you had other things that you wanted to do.
Yes, but I think that's true of many people in the cast. But we're on to a good thing here, and I think that the other stuff can wait.
I think so, too.
And there is pleasure in continuing to do something like this. I'm sure you're still finding new things in these parts.
Definitely. Oh, yes. Every night.
But at least you don't have the playwright around, Harley Granville Barker, to say... No, I didn't intend for that line to be read that way.
Somebody came to the box office, I was told this, and said, "Is this the Charlie Granville Barker play?" And the answer was, "No, it's the Davy Mamet."
The Atlantic Theater Company's main stage is at 336 West 20th Street. That's between 8th and 9th Avenues. And if you'd like more information about tickets, well, now, since it's been extended a second time, the performance I went to was sold out, so, and it is a small house, you still have plenty of time to see it. The number is 212-239-6200. I want to thank you both so much for being with us, Michael Stuhlbarg and Fritz Weaver, the two of the any number of stars of this wonderful ensemble piece called The Voisey Inheritance by Harley Granville Barker, adapted for the modern stage by David Mamet. Did I cover everything?
Oh, beautiful.
Yes, sir.
Then it was all in one sentence. I'm amazed. Thanks again.
Thank you.
Pleasure.
Thanks for listening to the Leonard Lopate Show from WNYC, New York Public Radio. You can hear everything we do and check out our other programs on demand at WNYC.org or on iTunes. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org. And thanks.